is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the hour, we'll be talking about new experiments that turn the clock back in time and the future of the Hubble Space Telescope. But first, rover explorations on Mars seem to be getting back on track. New pictures were received from the rover Spirit this week after mission controllers fixed a memory glitch, this piece of software that had been plaguing the rover. And about 6,000 miles away, on the other side of the planet, Spirit's twin, Opportunity, is getting set to roll onto the surface this weekend. Both rovers are sending back very intriguing pictures that have geologists pretty excited. And joining me now to talk about what the rovers are seeing is Matt Gollenbeck, a geologist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, co-chair of the steering committee that picked the landing sites for the two rovers, and you may remember him as the project scientist for the Mars Pathfinder mission back in 1997. Welcome back to Science Friday, Matt.
A pleasure to be here again.
Let's catch up on some latest news. Is it true that the Opportunity has found evidence of that mineral hematite, iron oxide, in the area?
Yes, it came screaming out of the mini-TESS experiment results. That's the mini thermal emission spectrometer, and it appears to be lurking in with the dark grains, which we presume to be basalt.
And so it was just sampling right around where it was.
Yeah, it turned out we landed in a 20-meter diameter crater for Opportunity in Meridiani Planum, and it turns out that's one of the darkest, least dusty parts of the whole area we wound up in, and the mini-TESS is working just splendidly.
So it did a little bit of scan around its immediate neighborhood,
yeah,
and it came up with that. What about those little boulders, those flat outcroppings in the distance? Can you detect any hematite in those yet?
No hematite there, and no hematite in the soil itself. So it appears to be carried by those pebbles and cobbles of the dark stuff.
Wow, that seems mysterious.
No, I mean, you know, we expected to find hematite there. And although that was not really the goal of the mission, was to use the hematite as a marker to investigate a place that might have been wet in the past. And certainly those layered rocks, those light-colored rocks, certainly are boding very well for that investigation.
And the light-colored rocks, are those the ones that you've detected hematite on?
No, the hematite's in the dark
right. Cobbles
and grains.
So you're looking for the layered stuff in the lighter rocks.
Yeah, the lighter rocks are basically look like they're finely layered, extremely, almost laminated, as we geologists would say, with beds that are less than a centimeter thick. And even more interesting is there are small gravel or pebbles that are aligned along the bedding planes, implying that they've been captured and cemented in with those rocks.
You sound like you're describing a beach.
Well, that certainly is one possibility, but there's quite a few others. And we're all, you know, geologists, if we were never going to go to those rocks, we would speculate wildly because we couldn't be proved wrong. But in this case, we're going to be driving up to those and looking at them in some detail. And so no sense being wrong when we know we'll get the answer right pretty shortly.
Well, now you're talking like a physicist who have trouble being proved right about things.
Well, what an opportunity, so to speak, to be able to go to a place and investigate hypotheses that you've devised after landing and be able to, you know, answer them.
Well, so you found the hematite.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, and you were looking, you know, you're saying that hematite on Earth is formed in the presence of water.
Typically.
But it can be formed other ways.
Yeah, there's about six or so different ways that it can be formed. And we don't know which of the ways this particular one has formed yet. And part of it will be determined by looking at the material around it, that those light-colored rocks in that marker bed, as well as the other soils and so on, trying to build up the geologic history and understanding how that hematite formed.
And in the light bed that has those looks like it's laminated, is that a conclusive, if you go over there and look at it, can you conclusively say that it was formed by water or not?
We probably could. The way you would do that is by looking at the grains and their roundedness. If we go up to that layered material and we find, you know, spherically rounded little gravels and cobbles, that's pretty strong evidence that water reworked those into those rounded particles. On the other hand, if we see, you know, a very very different kinds of grain sizes that are angular, it could have gotten there by a variety of other ways, volcanic mechanisms, for example, and even others. So,
if there was any water on the planet, and could it be actually still in liquid form and locked up in any of the minerals?
Well, not in liquid form at the surface, because the pressure temperature on the surface is actually below the triple point of water. So water would exist only in a gas or a frozen form. And we know that there's water locked up in the ice caps of Mars and buried not very deep below the surface in the northern and southern hemispheres near the poles as ground ice.
Well, the reason I ask that is because I've seen scientists demonstrate how they have found salt here on Earth, little cubes of salt that are hundreds of millions of years old. And they can drill into the salt and actually extract water.
Oh, yes.
That is hundreds of millions of years old.
Yeah, so-called fluid inclusion.
Yeah, could you have that on the Mars someplace?
Sure, absolutely. And not, our payload couldn't actually determine that. You need quite sophisticated instruments to do that. But, yes, that sort of thing is sort of, locked up as a fluid inclusion. The amount of water there is pretty minuscule.
Well, the reason I ask that is because in some of these demonstrations, which I'm sure you're familiar with, they take some of this water that's hundreds of millions of years old, and there are dormant bacteria in it, and they just bring them back to life.
Yeah, not only that, you get the pressure, temperature, conditions of the atmosphere at the time it formed. It's quite amazing.
Well, I mean, if there were life on Mars hundreds of millions of years ago, could they not be locked up in water and the salt someplace?
It could be alive now.
Yeah.
I mean, the real reservoir for water, likely, is if there's an abundant quantity of water on Mars, below the permafrost or the ground ice, you could have a liquid groundwater table.
Uh-huh.
And that would be a much more inviting place for small organisms to live, if they were there at all.
Let's talk a bit about Spirit, which arrived first.
Yeah.
It is now, is it back to, how? What would you say percentage working-wise?
Oh, just about 100.
Okay.
In fact, we're starting to take images and get science data, and we expect to begin normal science operations this weekend as well. So we'll have two functioning rovers with six wheels on the dirt on Mars.
And when we last left Spirit, its arm was extended. Tell us what was going on.
It had placed the IDD, the Instrument Deployment Device, up against a dark rock called Adirondack, and it had placed the Mossbauer spectrometer up against the rock. And when we took a picture of it just yesterday or the day before, that's exactly where the Mossbauer spectrometer is, up against the rock.
And so is it going to just pick up there where it left off?
We're going to pick up, exactly where we left off. We'll get the Mossbauer reading of the rock, as well as the alpha proton X-ray spectrometer. We will likely rat the rock, which is the rock abrasion tool, and weather away the weathering rind, if there is a weathering rind, but erode the outer layers to get at the native rock underneath it, and then we will re-examine those with both the Mossbauer and the APXS, as well as the microscopic imager.
And if all those pictures, all that data comes back, what would you be looking for?
Well, that should pretty well determine what kind of rock it is. The odds-on favorite right now those are chunks of basalt, which is a very common igneous rock that forms from a primary mantle melt here on the Earth and just about everywhere else. So we would be looking to confirm that. But at a more subtle level, we'll be looking at what the weathering rind is and whether there have been chemical reactions with the atmosphere, and that tells you something about the atmosphere, as well as trying to calibrate when we look out in the scene with the remote sensing instruments of, you know, how reddish the rocks are and whether we can subtract away the dust that's covering them to get at the native composition with the mini test.
There were some puzzles about this soil we talked about at the beginning, having different color, having different consistencies. So we see some of the air, when the bags bounced on the surface, they pressed down some of the soil, changed their color, changed what the readings were coming back from the instruments to that area.
No, we definitely have inklings of three or four different kinds of soil at the two different sites. It turns out the two locations we landed in are substantially darker and lower in albedo than any of the other three landing sites we've been to. suggesting much less atmospheric dust. The Meridiani site is the lowest albedo place we've ever been on Mars. It's one of those dark regions that when you look at the globe, you see those dark areas. And so there's virtually no atmospheric dust that's sitting up on the surface. Now, when we measured the soil at the Spirit site, we saw this wonderful microscopic imager picture shows these almost look like stalactites or stalagmites. I can never remember which ones grow up.
C for ceiling.
Okay,
C for ceiling.
That's a good one to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it looked like a cemented soil that had been cemented from either airfall or something else.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the soil at the Meridiani site, which is substantially redder and darker in color, and only really exposed itself when we pushed the little rocks out of the way from the airbags.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there some question about why those tiny grains are sticking, clumping together so much?
Basically the microscopic image shows no individual grains. So the grains that make up the soil at the Spirit site must be composed of, you know, sub 30 micron particles, and it's possible that they're even the atmospheric dust, which is probably 1 or 2 microns in size, that have just sort of cemented together in this bizarre pattern. At Opportunity, we've yet to get spectra, close up, but we'll see what that is.
Some had suggested this might be mud.
Well, it's not wet, whatever it is, that's for sure.
It's like some marshy salt residue mud or something.
It has elevated chlorine and sulfur, which is consistent with a cementing agent that might have existed in that sort of a state, but it's certainly not wet now.
Hmm. So what would you like to see happening in the next few days? What would, be the best possible outcome in the next few days for you?
Well, we're just starting the process of sort of planning out the next sort of couple of weeks. We have extremely long-range plans for Spirit that involve going to that 200-meter diameter crater up to the northwest and trying to look at a diversity of materials. And that will be particularly important for Spirit because to first order, all those rocks around us look to be pretty much the same. And we really want to see a diversity to tease out what the geologic history has been there. At Opportunity, it's clear we're going to spend quite some time in that crater. We've hit the scientific jackpot, so to speak. And there's these wondrous series of soils and granules and little rock fragments right in the end. And then, of course, the wondrously layered outcrops. So we'd want to look at all those in some detail before we ever get going farther away.
Is it true that you're not quite sure which crater you're in?
Yeah. We had an initial pick. It's kind of funny. We had an initial pick from the initial radiometric solution, which was derived from tracking the spacecraft into the atmosphere. But now they have a much more detailed solution, a navigation solution, that places us a full kilometer away. And the map tie error is probably larger or smaller than the difference between those. So we're in a different 20-meter crater, and we're not exactly sure which one.
But it's a real, as someone described it, a hole-in-one to get in a mound, a crater that small.
Well, and it didn't really matter that we were in the crater. It's that the geology is so spectacular there.
Yeah.
That's what's so exciting. We will probably be able to figure out which crater we're in fairly shortly. We expect that there will be some images taken from the Mars Orbiter camera on board MGS, the Mars Global Surveyor spacecraft. And as we did for Spirit, we likely would image Opportunity directly.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Matt, and thanks for joining us. We'll be talking to you in the near future. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you.
Talking with Matt Gollenbeck, who was out there at NASA's JPL laboratory talking about Mars. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to switch gears and talk about turning the clock back in time and subatomic particles. Stay with us.